Hi, this is Joe Scott. For 25 years, you've been coming to Inman Connect. Now, Connect is coming to you. Find the details at inman.com.
Hi, this is Brad Inman with my Daily Dispatch. I'm super excited today to have with me Selma Hepp, who is Chief Economist with CoreLogic, and Matthew Gardner, who's Chief Economist with Windermere Real Estate. Now more than ever, we're all trying to figure out where this housing market might go this summer, this fall, and even into next year. And it's really hard to predict. And these two are very smart and savvy, but they're humble enough to know that it's not easy. It's probably harder than it's ever been to predict what might happen into the future. But we're going to try to jump in here and figure out kind of where we're at with the housing market today from the point of view of economists, where we might be this summer, and how bad and how long it might go, and when we might recover from this. And again, we all know that no one has the right answer, and forecasters are like weather people. They're, other than Southern California, it's kind of hard to predict the weather even tomorrow, let alone a week, month, 3 months in advance. But please welcome Selma and Matthew. Greetings, gang. How are you, Selma?
Very well, thank you. Thank you for having me.
Where are you at? What city?
In Croatia, Supetar. It's an island across from Split, where Game of Thrones was filmed.
That's where you are right now?
Yeah. No, I'm not. That's my background. I'm in Los Angeles right now.
This is only audio for our listeners, but beautiful picture of Croatia. Because I do video so I can make eye contact. And so you're in LA. Whereabouts in LA? I'm in the desert over here.
Oh, in Burbank.
Oh, fantastic. Mm-hmm. Okay. And you're doing well? Your family healthy and everything?
Yes. Thank you. Thank you for asking.
And do you have family in Croatia still?
I do. I have a sister and her family. My parents are here with me in LA. We're a very small group.
Oh, good. Matthew, are you in Seattle?
Hi, Brad. I am indeed. Yep. Downtown Seattle. Although my living room, which is where I've been living for the last 6 weeks, I feel like something out of The Shining right about now, but that's okay.
We all have, right? I've been talking to unicorns in my front yard, so you can tell that I haven't gone. let's dive into this. Where is the housing market, let's just say right now? And again, in the pre-call here, Selma brought up, and we always have these discussions, they're so important. Every region's different, every locality's different, consumers are different in New York, they're different than Seattle, but let's try to, maybe, and we'll go through some regions here, what you all know about the regions, but where are we right now with the housing market, whether it be supply or demand? So how bad is it? How bad is it getting? And any hopeful signs of any of the data you have?
Should I start?
Yes.
Okay, so with being that I'm with CoreLogic currently, we do have access to MLS data, and we have been tracking some of the indicators on a weekly basis. And one of the most things of most interest to me currently is the pending sales. So what is going into contract, and then new listings. So I think what's, maybe at first, it doesn't look as good, but I think it's going to improve in the future is, in terms of the pending sales, we have seen a large decline. So I'm referring here to last couple of weeks when staying home policies have kind of hit, the peak before anything started open, because we do know some states have started opening. And some actually areas, for example, LA, in LA, realtors can now show homes again. So that's going to be a positive going forward. But in terms of pending sales overall in the last few weeks, they have dropped about 40% on a year-over-year basis, so compared to the same week last year. But once when we started seeing this decline of 40% in early April, it stabilizes at that. So last 3 weeks has remained at 40%. So I think, that kind of reflects the work.
Mm-hmm. So we know, Sam, we're on the same page. When you say a pending sale, that's things that have gone into escrow in effect, not closed, right?
Yes, exactly.
But, mm-hmm. So that would represent the amount of actual transactions. Whether they close is another matter, but that's, you're saying 40%. And is that kind of across the board that you're seeing that US, or is it?
Yeah, actually that is a national number, but I've also digged deeper into LA number and it's about the same. So, yeah.
Tell us, so maybe the 40%, and I'm hearing 35 to 75% when I talk to, you know, active realtors, but the MLS data is a good, important, a valuable piece of information here. Matthew, housing market right now, what do you think we're at?
I think it's a tale of kind of two cities and two sides of the equation. From a home seller's perspective, a lot of them have decided to wait. They're holding their listings back, and for several reasons. A lot of it, if it's by choice, as in they don't have to move, I think they're saying, you know, let's just hold back because, quite frankly, I don't want people coming through my home that might be contagious. So at the same time, however, they're also getting a bit worried, and they believe that as when we come out of this, are we going to see a flood of new inventory? Is it going to start shifting into a home buyer's market as opposed to home sellers? I don't think that's going to be the case, but maybe we'll get to that point a bit later on. From a buyer's perspective, they're out. We've certainly seen, it was a bizarre scenario we saw clearly starting middle part of March. And as Selma mentioned, a lot of markets, including our own here in Seattle and Washington State, temporarily shut down real estate, in essence. For a few weeks, it was just considered non-essential. That got changed a couple of weeks ago. So given the fact that nothing could happen, that obviously is going to have an impact on some of the numbers. But from a home buyer's perspective, we've actually already started to see a lot of them come back. And it's interesting. For several different...
Looking or actually submitting offers, Matthew?
Both, yeah. Actually. We've seen some concerns, certainly, over the last few weeks. But last week or so, without a doubt, in Western Washington, they're back. And in talking to some of our brokers, there's a fascinating mentality that would-be home buyers have got. And they're looking at this now and saying, well, perhaps buying a home now is going to be a hedge against a future pandemic. Yeah. And to explain that, I mean, you can look at all our share portfolios, for example. In the space of a month, they dropped by, 35%? Did housing drop in value by 35%? No, it didn't. So I would not be surprised.
Let me ask you, Matthew, isn't it true we don't know what the actual market value of homes have dropped? I mean, if they have or haven't or gone up, do we really, without the transaction data information other than Q1, we don't
right.
really
and know. That's true.
We don't know.
You certainly can say that. My forecast right now, however, is if you look at year over year, I don't looking at month over month or X month this year versus X month last year. You know, 12-month average, 2020 versus 2019, my model is still saying the prices will be up by about 2.5%.
Gotcha.
But again, I tend to take a longer view on these things rather than...
That's very insightful, Matthew. Let me ask you something. Let's take this seller issue. Anything from the MLS data, you said pending sales, so that means actual transactions. Any evidence on the inventory side in the MLS, in terms of things being listed, any quantitative information there that you can shed light on what Matthew said?
Right, the same sort of thing, you know, I think there's a distinguishing point here, which was March, you can say March 17th or whatever, you know, when things before the corona, things after the corona crisis pandemic, the staying home policies. But yeah, there has been a significant drop in new inventory. And the numbers that have been fluctuating, but they stay within 40 to 50% range. The inventory.
Not just pending sales, but a 40% decline in new people, which would echo what Matthew said. Fewer people are willing to sell their house for obvious reasons after the 7th of March.
Yeah,
do you agree with, is there some... The same motivation. I don't want people walking through my house. How am I going to sell a house if no one can come here? Is it that you think it's the same hesitation, or is it just the very idea of trying to sell your house along with everything else you're doing just seems like that's always a pretty high drama event. We all have enough drama in our lives.
Think about it this way. You've also now, in many parts of the country, you've got your children at home right now. They're supposed to be at school.
Yeah.
So, and again, them hanging around their bedrooms is not conducive to listing a home for sale. So we are in just very kind of massively unprecedented periods of time right now.
Selma, what do you think, if that's true, and there's not new inventory and there's a shrinkage of inventory, and I don't know if you have any evidence to support what Matthew said on the buy side, lookers, maybe even people providing offers, those elements would mean that maybe prices will hold up. What's your thought on that? If we look at just simple supply demand.
Right. Yeah. So, you know, also anecdotally, but, you know, I have seen some data where there is an increase in withdrawals and a temporary off-market statuses. So I think people have just withdrawn for the time being their listing, so the question is, are they going to release? Is this going to lead to lower inventory? And is that going to provide a flooring for the prices going forward?
Yeah.
I think even going into the crisis, we were already in such a low inventory environment. Presumably, we will not get much more as a result of this. I mean, I've been reading an article on the impact of Airbnbs, and are they going to flood the market? Still, they represent less than 0.5% of the housing stock nationally. So, I don't foresee that being a solution to our housing shortage problem. But I have been looking at prices on a weekly basis, and they have remained relatively stable. I will say that for homes that were in a contract that closed within the first couple of weeks of April, they were closing at a larger discount, which made me think maybe buyers and sellers who have to close in the current situation maybe are more willing to negotiate. That doesn't mean
so they're more desperate, probably. If they're having to do sell their house right now, they're probably in a pretty difficult situation where they're willing to accept lower prices, right? Is that your point?
That's my point, exactly.
What's the number look like in that data? Is it 10%, 5%?
It's less than 10%. Between 5, okay.
Let's move from pandemic. Let's assume maybe if we're lucky, like we just found out in the Bay Area, San Francisco, it's going to be another month, you know, through till June. And that isolation seems to be the damper, at least somewhat, on the market, right? But let's imagine maybe June 1st, some of the country will come back, and we don't know what that means, right? We don't know coming back, it means. Maybe we're out of the health hazard area or zone that we were in of crisis, but we're now into an economy that, quite frankly, is terrible. How might we fare this summer without, again, knowing what any of this means? I mean, you two as economists don't really believe, do you, that everyone is going to roar back to work and employers are going to hire everybody back and it's going to be like February 15th, right?
Right. I think you've got to look at it very closely regarding who was either laid off or furloughed. This thing hit two specific sectors drastically more than any other. The first was leisure and hospitality. Hotels, bars, restaurants, they shut down. And that's one job in 11 in America. The second group that was hit more than any other was retail. One job in 10 in the country is retail. So you combine those two things, and those are the ones where we saw a majority of the layoffs occurring. Over time, because the shutdown continued, it is starting to spill over into construction, spill over into manufacturing because of supply chain issues. But in aggregate, it's hit those markets particularly hard. Now, is every bar and restaurant going to reopen? No, it won't. My expectation is we'll likely lose roughly 20 to 25% of them when all is said and done.
They'll never reopen at all.
Pardon?
They'll never reopen at all.
And that's my point. Yeah, they won't. I mean, the margins are so skinny. It's you've got a 1 in 10 chance of surviving 12 months opening up a new restaurant anyway. So yeah, you have that side. Hotels. Hotels furloughed, obviously laid off people. I'm here in Seattle, 25 hotels downtown. There's only four open today. They're open partially, but they still are going to reopen. Front of house staff are going to have to come back, housekeepers, et cetera, et cetera. So I think when we start to reopen the country, not all, many of those jobs will come back, but there's still some more pain to go through. I mean, the unemployment rate in July is going to be probably around 17%. But by my forecast, it pulls back down to about 8% by the end of the year. But even when it comes to housing...
That's very optimistic, Matthew. Where do you get that? Is that...
This is our modeling that we do internally. It jives with a lot of modeling coming out of JP Morgan. I have some friends of mine back on the East Coast that are essentially... The way we differ is GDP. That's a different discussion. Unemployment rate, again, is going to start pulling back. But most importantly, when it comes to ownership housing, 80% of these job losses or furloughs have actually been in lower income households where a majority are renters and not homeowners. Yeah. This is going to hit the apartment market significantly more than it is the ownership market.
Yeah, I talked to the guys at Zumper this morning and they made that point. The rental market has been hit hard in terms of if you're a landlord. So any thought on this, like moving into the center, the blurry economic picture, are you as optimistic as Matthew about the ownership market not being hit as hard because the unemployment for likely buyers is stinging as bad? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I agree with Matthew. But going back to a question about what type of recovery it's going to be, I think it's important to listen to the plans for the opening of the economy, how, well, in most states, like California, which is a big contributor to overall housing numbers anyways, it's a very, very gradual opening. You know, it's only certain businesses over the next 2 weeks, only certain businesses within month from then. So that in itself translates in a very slow upward momentum on the economic recovery, not a V shape or this a very, you know, bounce back like, you know, you were asking about if we believe in that. So I think that's important in mind, because it really is interesting to listen to the plans for reopening in determining how this is going to play out. The other thing is, I agree with that as well.
Even that is not, this V, I'm so hard, I mean, I don't think people are saying the V anymore. That was kind of a nonsense thing. It was like after 9/11, bingo, people are buying houses in Tribeca. That's true. That is what happened back then. But that's, doesn't, the whole V idea, I mean, when the pandemic rollout, you know, post scares, it's going to be slow. And that means the economic recovery is going to be incremental. So it's hard to imagine anything. It's just going to be, we're going to have a bullish summer for real estate, or for that matter, anything, right?
Right.
I think when you look at transactions.
Did I cut you off? Just real quick, Summer, did I cut you off with one last brilliant thought that
wish it was brilliant, but it must have not been because I forgot.
I forget everything these days. Go ahead, Matthew.
I think, well, it's a couple of things to think about in all these respects, one of which is transactional velocities. And I was looking at year over year, probably looking down 10-12%.
And tell me, Matthew, real quick, I don't mean to interrupt you. What is a transaction velocity?
Close sales.
Okay, velocity means the speed of which something closes.
Exactly. So overall, total transactions of existing home sales, I'm putting down, probably 2020 will be down somewhere between 10 and 12%. NAR came out with a number about 5 minutes ago. Their forecast is 14%. But also something else which we
are saying, 14% decline in velocity
in sales, in total transactions.
Okay, in total transactions for the whole year.
Now again, I was listening on Toll Brothers conference call. That was day before yesterday, and they were saying some fascinating things as well, which was a big uptick in demand, mainly in the first time buyer market, of disgruntled apartment dwellers moving out into the exurban markets and buying. And so they were actually remarkably enthusiastic, especially given where the home builders sentiment index, which has been horrendous last month, obviously. So there are these nuggets going around there. But the trouble is, as Selma knows, if you're any forecaster, we don't know. I mean, I'm on the Governor's Council of Economic Advisors here in Washington. So every week I'm on the phone with Governor Inslee. We're also on the phones with the governors of Oregon and California to try and figure out how collectively we are going to reopen the West Coast. And it is going to be a role, as she quite rightly stated, and it is going to be more non-face-to-face businesses opening earlier. And therefore, that is going to mean people getting back to work. It's going to be, again, no light switch turning on, turning off. It is going to be gradual. And this also presumes we don't end up going down the same path as China, with opening up too early, a bunch of new infections, and having to shut down again, which would be horrendous for everything, especially housing.
Let me ask you, both of you, as economists, I never remember anything in my life being this uncertain. And when I was a young boy, someone got polio in my town. And polio has our parents made us wash our hands. And then I was in San Francisco during the HIV epidemic, and that has so many things similar. And I wrote lots of stories about, you know, how that affected the housing market, you know, from disclosing that someone died of HIV to complicated the market in San Francisco. If someone, even was gay in a home, you know. And then I think to the, you know, the late 70s when we had a political crisis, much like now, we had two sides hating each other, we had a racial divide, we had just come off inflation, we had a flu virus that was out of control and we all had to take a shot. And the unemployment picture was really, really bad. And then I think of the dot-com crash. I was in San Francisco and there was just a massive layoff of the tech sector. Our Boeing in the early 80s in Los Angeles. But I feel like this one is all of those put together, creating unmeasurable uncertainty.
Point one would be, I don't want to be anywhere where you live. It seems that every time you go somewhere, something bad happens.
No, I used to cover natural disasters. That's another one I could call. No, I guess my point is, it's not where I lived, actually, Matthew. It was those times, those periods of time.
I was being
totally hit the nation. But I don't ever remember. You could kind of like, I would talk to economists. We all kind of together could, me as an observer and you as experts, you kind of imagine what's next based on history. It must be hard in your field right now with just the number of moving parts and the elements. Is that true or not?
Oh, absolutely. It's about the speed as well. This feels more like an economy that's entered a war. Mm. And I say that in all seriousness, because historically, you go back, all those points you mentioned, I mean, going back to recessions since the 70s, we know what was the exogenous effect. We know what the outside shock was that drove us there, whether it was energy or dot-coms or S&P or housing or whatever it may be. This was, we are plodding along quite nicely. First couple of months of the year, 250,000 jobs on average per month, unemployment rate around 3.5, no real inflation, signs of some real income growth. And it was great until it wasn't. In any recessionary period, it tends to be far more gradual. We weren't losing or seeing new unemployment claims in the 3, 4, 5, 6 million per week.
Yeah.
That we saw starting the third week of March.
So not only uncertain, but a stark, quick blow to the stomach.
Massively so.
My big picture BS portrait I just painted. How about you? Give me any insight on like this idea in your profession. Is it harder? I guess you just always go to data, but is it harder now than ever to figure out what's going on?
I just heard a prominent Fed economist say that everything we thought we knew about economic laws has gone out the window. So, you know, yes, it's very difficult, but I am a firm believer in data, and I'm a firm believer in just not taking a broad brush stroke at many of these data points that are coming out, but maybe, you know, taking a deeper look. It is bad. I've actually lived through the war. I was in Croatia at the time of the Balkan Wars. The way I'm trying to comfort myself these days is then is this too shall pass. So, you know, it's extraordinary, but I think this too shall pass.
It could be a lot worse.
Be a lot worse. Yeah. One thing that I am concerned about is, you know, coming into this, we had such huge income inequalities that are getting perpetuated. And I do worry about those people on the other part of the side of the spectrum. I do really honestly worry about them.
Well, you also wonder, you know, civil disorder and social unrest, which can be positive, but can also be horrific. Another dimension to all of this. You wonder when people, you know, could bust loose and just get so upset and panicked. I think we saw a little bit of that, the protest over the reopening. Let me ask you, one of my friends, he studies the economy really thoroughly and very smart guy. And he's worried, not today, but in 2 to 3 years for our children and grandchildren, that this printing of money, you know, and then I would call it defer, you know, deferring mortgage payments, deferring American Express payments, defer. I mean, the national government is setting a behavioral pattern here that we're all now engaged in. Defer, basically putting off today to some point in the future. And, you know, printing, what is it, several trillion dollars here? We understand why we're doing it. Interestingly, the left and the right have become Keynesian economists overnight. But it's like my dad used to say, he owned his little store for his whole life, and then he moved to California to work for someone. And he said, "Bradley, I was a Republican in Illinois and I'm a Democrat in California." And it was only because he was working for someone. He understood the plight of being an employee. Similarly here, I think we're seeing some of that, but are you worried about that? I mean, isn't that, aren't we writing an inheritance obituary for the future generations, or should we not worry about it?
I think there's a couple of ways to look at it. One, I mean, yeah, am I a Keynesian economist? Yeah, I mean, I wrote my thesis on the decline of Keynesian economic theory in the late 20th century. Exciting stuff. But so I think it's two things. One of which is, did the Fed and Congress have to adjust monetary and fiscal policy to address this? Absolutely, they did. The Fed threw everything but the kitchen sink at this, and they are today. And actually, I've got Jay Powell on TV right now. Didn't reduce Fed funds rate any further, which is good. Not a fan of negative interest rates. But in essence, what the Fed did as far as monetary policy was a requirement, lessons learned from 2008. There's no way you can look at it in any other way. This, but also at the same time, as you said, is this going to be a problem for our children and our grandchildren? You betcha it is. The expectation that conservatives and Republicans are budget hawks clearly is not the case today. Now, the printing of money, we're obviously clearly in QE4. There are worries out there that that is inflationary, and in some respects, it should be.
However, in a couple of years.
Pardon?
And probably in a couple of years, not necessarily.
Here's the thing, is that government debt is inflationary, household debt is deflationary. One offsets the other. Adding globalization to the mix as well. And globalization is also deflationary. So I'm more worried about deflation today than I am inflation.
Yeah. In the short term.
Right. But the bottom line is that we got a $25, $26 trillion national debt, budget deficit right now coming close to $4 trillion. It is going to be a problem. It can be addressed, but politically, no one is going to do it. The way you address it is by massive adjustments to the tax code.
Let's not get into that. I already got a headache going over this stuff right now. Sam, I give it.
I also say that in austerity measures, which aren't going to happen. Bottom line is our grandkids will be paying the bill.
Yep. Sam, we're getting close. We're really out of time. Give us some last thoughts. Communicate to the Inman community, which is a broad, diverse group of industry people, from CEOs who read and listen to this stuff, and to the everyday realtor, the broker owner, the mortgage cats, the title people. What? Give us a warm or cold message to that community, and any counsel or advice in terms of, you know, I think one of the challenges here is just sorting out what's happening and what is going to happen. Any advice to them as they think about the world, what not to read, what to turn off, what to turn on, or just ignore it? What would you give advice to working people that are in the industry?
I mean, if you're anything like me, you're trying to read everything and anything that's out there. You go to sleep at night and you can't go to sleep because you're worried. And then you think to yourself, did I read everything there was possible to read out there? You know, do I know all the economic data points? And do I actually understand, you know, what's going on out there in the world? Yeah. I think about that, and you know, but at the end of the day, I think maybe this has provided us with an opportunity to take a step back, to learn what's important to us in life, maybe spend time with our family, spend time with our kids. You know, I think maybe, you know, it's not all about what the current news is. So that's one thing. But the other thing is, you know, I do anecdotally hear that there is a lot of pent-up demand out there, that buyers are looking, that, you know, even they're maybe not looking inside the houses, but they're looking, they're interested, they want to know about the deals that are upcoming. So I am optimistic about the housing market. I am, for the same reasons that Matthew mentioned earlier. It's a different consumer than it would be inhibiting rental space. Yep. And, you know, another data point that was interesting to us recently is that the number of applicants for new mortgage apps is been increasing among millennials. So millennials actually have remained in the market to a large extent. Right. You know, so
maybe it takes a pandemic to finally unlock them.
Yeah.
Give us the last word, Matthew, to the Inman community.
This is a health crisis, not a housing crisis.
There you go. Hey, you two are fabulous. I wish we had another hour. You have so much to say, and you have such a good grasp. I love your measured and humble approach to what you know and don't know. And keep up the good work. It's folks like you that help the industry understand where the heck this is all going. And keep our reporters and editors, our Inman, if you got data of any kind that we can share with those million readers in real estate, and they seem to be glued to Inman News now, our readership spiked, our membership, everything. They're spending more time. And we love that, you know, the trolls disappeared because people are being kinder and nicer. And please give us information so that we can spread it to the people that really need it, okay?
Absolutely.
Thank you. So thank you, Matthew. Thank you so much.
Norman, nice to meet you.
Nice meeting you as well, even though virtually.
This is Brad Inman checking out.